It's like a heist movie broke out at an Oscars after party as a stunning lineup of acting heavyweights, also Dan Aykroyd, unite to conquer the futuristic technology of data encryption. In our first ever fan vote, you chose Sneakers, which was the number one movie in America.
The number one movie in America.
Movie in America.
Movie in America.
The number one movie in America.
My name's Sean Collier. This is the number one movie in America. I'm joined by a couple of Wilford Brimleys in a Gary Busey world. It's Camila Adams.
The fuck you think I do here?
I wanted to make that the gif. That gif is easily available on Twitter, but I was like, I'll keep it PG-13. And Robin Hitchcock.
Hello. I wanted to make a pithy comment, but where are we? What is happening? Who are we talking about? Wilford Brimley.
I had it in my notes last week, and I felt bad, but this was a gut reaction. When you kick Wilford Brimley, it shouldn't make a sound.
Aww.
Like he should absorb it?
Right, because they use the Foley, you know, that punching the side of beef Foley sound that you're accustomed to being like punching a square-jawed man in the face.
Right.
And I'm like, that's not, it would be like a pillow.
This is true. I agree with that. Aw, Wilford is.
The firm was fun. I listening back to last week's episode, I just couldn't believe how much we had to say.
I know. I saw somebody had commented, Amanda Waltz of City Paper is saying that she wants to see the continuance of that story told about Holly Hunter and David What's-His-Face's love story, which
I'm into.
I'm here for.
Yeah.
Hopefully set smile. At Christmas time. Like that would be delightful.
But I don't want it in the legal world. I want it to be like The Deep. I want them to
right.
stay in the Cayman Islands and begin hunting for undersea treasures.
Exactly. And speaking of David What's-His-Face, shows up again. He's a repeat offender this week, or two in a row.
That's right. Strathairn.
Yeah, we have his face. David Strathairn. He's one of those guys that got, like, a later career Oscar nomination, and, mm-hmm. like, people were like, where have you been? And he was, like, working constantly throughout my life.
Would you like to see my resume?
For?
Good night and good luck.
That's right.
Yeah.
Which he was very good in.
He was like, that is one of the heaviest best actor fields ever. The fact that he is the also ran should have really should have won, like that was Heath Ledger should have won for Brokeback Mountain. And it's not like Philip Seymour Hoffman was not good in Capote, he just should not have won.
Yeah, that was loaded.
Although I guess honestly part of the reason at the time that I was like, this is dumb, he shouldn't win, is that I was like, Philip Seymour Hoffman's gonna be nominated for a million more Oscars. Right, like he was nominated for a couple more, but I expected him to have a longer career ahead of him, so
right.
As did
Heath Ledger as well.
Expect that to be true too.
Right.
So David Strathairn wins in the end.
More ways than
in
one.
Sneakers, by the way. We're talking about the movie Sneakers. Your choice, listeners. The vote was, of course, we already knew this because as you heard in the Firm episode, we totally already knew that. Didn't just record every possibility. It was 18 votes for Sneakers, 17 votes for League of Their Own, 9 for Forces of Nature, and 6 for Dead Ringers, which I speculated that this would happen last week, but it came to pass. Both of Robin's movies alone got more votes than both of my movies together.
Oh, wow.
Thanks. Thanks, everybody.
He's not going to take it personally at all.
Hey, if Nightmare on Elm Street 3 had been allowed to pass, I really think it would have been right up there. But Robin, from the four movies you brought to the table, how do you feel about Sneakers being the one that made it to the episode?
It's actually the one I voted for, so I guess technically I cast the winning vote on this one, and only because I was worried about getting emotional talking about A League of Their Own. So I find it incredibly unlikely that I will cry while recording today's episode, and therefore I feel like a winner.
All right.
And also, I watched it on Wednesday night or Thursday. One of the nights that we were sitting around waiting for the election results, I was like, you know what? I'm just going to watch Sneakers. It's going to make me feel good. I'm going to watch it. And then I was surprised that it pulled ahead with those late mail-in tweets.
The mail-in votes skew Redford. I don't know if that was a pun or not. It's been a long week, everybody. Jeez. But I hadn't seen it. Camila, had you seen it?
No. I've seen the cover art a bajillion times in my life. It's one of those things. And I was, yeah. This is, you know, I did not grow up with a dad in my house. So my knowledge of what dads like is very limited. But this is like, in my opinion, this is like a very dad movie.
This is a dad movie. For sure.
Do dad movies have to have crimes? I'm thinking about dad movies and it's like, Westerns,
Field of Dreams?
Jailbreaks. There's probably crimes in Field of Dreams. He didn't have a permit to build that. But really, like Westerns, heists.
I think baseball.
Okay, baseball is the exception. Yeah.
Well, maybe like a football story, or you know, the, what do you call it? Like the down dog, whatever.
Underdog?
Yes, thank you. The underdog tales and told in sports and stuff.
The downward facing underdog. Yeah, sports movies are the exception. Most of those just have, like, swearing and boozing, not necessarily criminal activity. I just want to watch more Westerns. I don't know why, like, going in the winter, I just want to, like, be lonely on the plains. I don't know. Aww. It's weird. Anyway, let's do some segments. Robin, fittingly, was due up to recap a movie, so she will now offer you the, and this is challenging, because things happen.
Yeah, 60-second plot recap. Yeah, and I didn't get to practice this one. So,
all right.
60-ish second plot recap of Sneakers. Ready and go.
In 1969, two college kids hack around and find out. One of them goes to jail. The other one's out getting pizza. He grows up to be Robert Redford. He lives under the assumed name Martin Bishop and runs a security consultancy that gets paid to rob people. Bishop and his team of Oscar nominees are drafted by the NSA to find a code-breaking device with the codename C-Tech Astronomy. They do so alarmingly easily. They discover it has the power to black out coasts, crash planes, launch nukes. They realize they're in deep shit, but not fast enough for Bishop to get framed for murdering a Russian diplomat. His friend did not die in prison, but is alive and now has the device. They have to re-steal it with a long involved caper involving the sound of concrete seams, getting Stephen Tobolowsky to say passport, and moving very slowly in a hot room. They win the day and blackmail the NSA for clean records, Winnebagos, trips to Tahiti, pizza on Earth, goodwill towards men, and a hot chick's phone number.
Great. 47 seconds.
Woo!
Nailed it.
That was great. And also, it cleared up something for me. I didn't realize that Ben Kingsley was his friend from the beginning of the film.
Oh.
I was like, how does he know? I was just like, yeah, I just, you know, I assume they blah, 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 knew each other way back when. But yes, it wasn't specifically, didn't click that. Oh.
I remember as a child being like, how, what? He doesn't look or sound like this person.
Yeah, I was about to say, your confusion is understandable because those two guys look absolutely nothing like Robert Redford and Ben Kingsley.
Right.
Ben Kingsley is one thing. When it's as recognizable of a person as Robert Redford, and we know what he looks like as a young
right.
man.
Right.
You can't just be like, ah, this guy's got red hair and is vaguely tall. Get him.
Like,
no,
close
you
enough.
Gotta try.
Just don't show their faces, I feel like is the solution to that
yeah.
problem.
And also what's funny is as I was watching this, I was thinking Robert Redford looks like Brad Pitt grown up.
Right.
You know, so, and also I think A River Runs Through It came out the same year and I think he plays Brad Pitt's dad in that movie. So,
that sounds true.
So why not just go ahead and get old Bradley? Like he wasn't that expensive back then.
No, right? People hardly knew who he was.
Right.
Actually, that's interesting because I immediately started thinking about how, like, if they did it now, they would just do de-aging their face. And the first de-aged face I ever saw was Robert Redford's in Spy Game, co-starring Brad Pitt.
Oh, wow. Huh.
It was very bad.
It all comes together.
They were not ready for that technology.
Wasn't he also de-aged in a Marvel movie? Or am I just confusing him with Michael Douglas? I feel like Robert Redford was in a Marvel film.
He is in Winter Soldier and Endgame.
Right.
I don't think that they de-aged his face, though, because he was old.
Gotcha.
Wasn't he around in that business where they're back in the 50s?
I don't think so.
Maybe not. I don't know. This is the thing with Marvel movies. It's like, who was in them? Everybody. What happened? Everything.
Yeah.
Right. What time span? The whole entire existence of Earth. That's the time span. Right.
Camila, what's your first impression before we get to facts?
It was just one of those, had I seen it in 93, my feelings would probably be a little bit different. And also, I don't feel like Robert Redford isn't very captivating on screen to me. I'm just kind of like, really? This guy?
Wow. Wow.
I disagree with that. I love Robert Redford on screen. In fact, I think that he really carries this movie. I was throwing you to the wolves a little bit because my reaction was also exactly and I felt so bad.
Like, it wasn't terrible. I know. Like,
no, definitely not.
I'm just going to say it to all of our listeners. Wow.
Right.
Wow.
Right. I felt so bad because I was like, this is the first time one of us has selected a movie.
Right.
Yeah.
This is the first time. And I'm watching it and going like, oh no, I don't love it. I don't dislike it.
Right.
But it's not like, oh, what a gift you've given us, Robin. It's like, okay. And I was like, oh no.
Oh gosh, now I feel guilty because I feel like I have taken from both of you
this
experience of this hidden gem movie. Because I framed it, if I just said, hey, you should watch this movie, it's got a great cast, it's really fun. But then I had all of our listeners, or 18 of our listeners, saying, like, no, seriously, this is low-key one of my favorite movies. I've set you guys up to be underwhelmed by what is a very whelming movie.
Oh, no, it's like, it's one of those things, like, you know what? It's always been in my periphery. Like, ever since this movie came out, it's like always just kind of right there. But nothing has ever pushed me to the over the edge. It's like, yes, I will go ahead and watch it this weekend. So it's not like, you know what? I'm not mad that I saw it. But it was just like, that's fine.
And to assuage that guilt, there's no world where I would have discovered this and loved it. Because this is, we talked about this a little bit way back when we did Ocean's 11. I don't care about heists, and so whenever I got to this, I was going to be like, the cast is great and there are some fun scenes, but I don't care about any of the action at all. There's just some, my brain doesn't connect when people are trying to pull something off. I'm like, mm-hmm.
I'm reacting to that the way that I reacted to Camila saying that Robert Redford is not a compelling screen presence.
I don't know what
you guys are telling me about this food. It's like a circle of bread and you put like sauce and melted cheese on it. And it's like, it's okay. That's what I'm hearing.
I don't know what it is. It's just, but Sidney Poitier.
Right?
Yeah.
Bless his soul. And a Hail Mary for
a lot more is Sidney Poitier's Patience of a Saint wife.
Right?
Can you imagine being at parties?
Oh my god. People? With mother in general. Just specifically, like with mother.
Like, I just, good for her. And also his poor sleeping daughter.
Yeah, who I didn't know was there until he was like making a mad dash to leave. Like, oh, you had a kid there. Oh, okay.
Speaking of, look, Dan Aykroyd can do a lot of things. He can bust ghosts. He can push conspiracy theories.
He can sing the blues.
He can sing the blues. You know what he can't do is act opposite Sidney Poitier.
No.
I don't think he's bad. Like, I love some of the little quips where he's like, oh, JFK's still alive. Like, fun.
Right.
Go over there and be fun, Dan Aykroyd. But when those two, it's like watching a cat and a math teacher try to understand one another.
Yeah.
They're just not in the same world.
In my notes, I had that Sidney Poitier really classes up the joint, and then Dan Aykroyd comes and smears Cheese Whiz on it.
I do think, though, for the non-nerds listening, like, when I say gang of Oscar nominees, that includes Dan Aykroyd. Dan Aykroyd was nominated for Best Supporting Actor for Driving Miss Daisy. It's a thing. Huh. So I think, so this is 2 years after, or 3 years after his Oscar nomination, I feel like there was a part of Dan Aykroyd that was like, time to be a serious actor. And I think that he was trying to play a character on the spectrum when we did not know what being on the spectrum meant at all. And I think he was trying here. I think that that is why he comes off as so stilted, is because he was doing something and it didn't quite work.
Interesting. I mean, I don't like
theory.
His character was, I mean, it was interesting. It was necessary for that band of misfits. But yeah, I mean, and also like that time, it feels like conspiracy theorists were like really a big thing at that time period in films.
Sure.
And so it has a purpose. His character has a purpose, but it's just, yeah, I don't know. I don't want to say like his performance of that character was bad. It's just Dan Aykroyd. Maybe it's the fact that his eyebrows weren't waxed. I don't know. It's just the unibrow is just too close.
Totally right that it is one of those things where like he just can't play on the same field as Sidney Poitier.
And as you point out, Robin, see if you can name them. 3 Oscar winners and 5 nominees.
Okay, so Sidney Poitier won, mm-hmm. and Kingsley won.
Mm-hmm.
Nominees would be Marion McDonald, Dan Aykroyd, David Strathairn, River Phoenix, and James Earl Jones. So I'm missing one winner.
Yes.
Are you counting Robert Redford as a winner?
This bit of trivia is.
Okay.
So he's not an acting. This IMDb trivia fact is. He's not an acting winner.
Right. He was nominated for The Sting, but he won director and best picture for Ordinary People.
Oh. So certainly, yes, a gallery of awards bait, to the point where the movie's got 7 minutes to go, and hey, why not get James Earl Jones to drop?
Right,
by?
Exactly. Hail Mary, this is James Earl Jones from The Shadows. I'm like, what? Okay, that's fine. I'm totally happy with this.
I do think that the end of this movie accounts for a lot of its lasting goodwill in people's hearts. Like, I think that is just such a satisfying and heartwarming scene of blackmailing the government that, and also, like, I really appreciated watching it this time how they set up all of those things early in the movie when they're at their first party. They start talking about, like, what would you do if you could get anything, right? And then they get that opportunity and they do it.
What's funny is that moment in the, when they're saying everything, like, what I would do with all my winnings, you know, when they're explaining all that, my immediate thought was, one of y'all is not going to make it. One of you are not going to be able to do something with all of your money.
But everyone does make
it. Yeah. So.
Except for that poor Russian diplomat.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. He was just trying to convert to the post-Cold War reality. He was doing fine.
Yeah.
Well, here are some facts. This is going to be a little briefer than usual, just because there's not a whole lot to report. Sneakers was released September 11th, 1992. By the way, Robin picked 4 movies when we did this draw. 3 of them were from 1992, and 1 was from 1991.
You had a real soft spot there in the movie.
It was the 17th number one movie of that year. Won its opening weekend with $10 million. Very little was going on at the box office. The other debuts were Hellraiser 3, Hell on Earth, third place with $3.2 million, and Wind, a yacht racing drama, sixth place, $2.2 million. Sneakers repeated at number one the following weekend. It is a 2-week nomia, made $8.1 million in its second, easily holding off 4 debuts, Captain Ron, Singles, Husband and Wives, and School Ties.
Woo!
Finally dethroned in its third weekend by the debuting Last of the Mohicans. Remained in the top 10 for 6 weeks, earning a total of $51.4 million. It is the 30th top grossing film of 1992, tucked right in between My Cousin Vinny and the Mighty Ducks. I didn't want to roll over Camila's shout out to School Ties.
Yay! that's all I've got, really.
5th place debut.
Brendan Fraser was a gem at that point in time. And
truly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
This is the next to last theatrical release for Sidney Poitier.
I was wondering.
His final big screen role was The Jackal in 1997. He's in 4 or 5 TV movies in the 90s. He's alive today.
Okay, thank you.
What?
That was my next Google.
What happened there? Was he just like, I've given you people enough?
Probably. He's like, you know what? I'm tired. I've done the thing. I've done the damn thing. You are welcome. I'm going to go hang out somewhere. And I think, and also, and I'm sure it probably has nothing to do with it, but I know his daughter is Sidney Poitier
also
as well.
Sidney Poitier.
Yes, is an actor as well. Maybe he was just like, you know what? I'm cool. It's fine.
Maybe playwright of Six Degrees of Separation paid him to keep that plot relevant. So he can't be too famous, can't be too much in the spotlight.
What?
I'm sorry. What? That was a really weird, deep cut, confusing reference.
Sometimes you gotta make a joke for you.
I hope that one of our listeners is laughing at this.
So going back to Robin's picks that were all from 92 and then 91, were you and I on the same episode of You Can't Handle the Truth, and we were talking about our favorite movie years, and was that your favorite movie year, 92?
No, I picked 99 like the basic bitch that I am. I think that honestly, okay, here's my theory. First of all, I was 8 years old in 1992, so like that is exactly the right age to see a movie feeling like you're a grown-up watching it,
right?
Like, I really felt like I was a grown-up when I was eight, and make a lasting connection to it that you believe holds up past nostalgic scrutiny, right? Like, you know, this isn't true for me, but imagine that I did love The Goonies when I was 8 years old. Mm-hmm. As a grown-up, I'm self-aware enough to be like, well, I loved it because I saw it as a child.
Yeah.
But with Sneakers, I could pretend that I just loved it, which I do think that grown-ups also, not you two, but I think other people who would see Sneakers as actual grown-ups would like it.
Probably. You know, those who have a thing for Robert Redford, for old Bobby Red.
Who doesn't?
I don't.
Camila.
Which, again, not to rain on anybody's Robbie Parade, but, you know, that's just, he's not my old guy of choice.
I have a Robert Redford anecdote, if you'll allow me.
Sure.
So my dad's best friend, incidentally, the person who I saw this movie with, his cousin, uncle, I don't know, some family member of his was a senator from Utah, Bob Bennett, and they went to the Sundance restaurant, and Robert Redford happened to be there at his restaurant, and their server was like, hey, Mr. Redford, you know, Senator Bennett is here, you should go say hi. So Robert Redford comes to their dinner table to talk to this guy.
Wow.
And, you know, just do the normal, like, thank you for being here, let me know if you need anything, all that stuff. And the senator's teenage daughters are sitting at the table losing their minds. And then Robert Redford leads, and one of his daughters goes to the senator, Dad, do you know who that was? And he said, no, but sweetheart, don't worry. That happens all the time.
What?
Like, people come talk to me and I have to pretend to know who they are all the time.
What? How does this grown-ass man not know who Robert Redford is, and his teenage daughters?
Senator.
And who just, like, apparently, I guess they just watched A Great Gatsby in English lit or something. So that's why they knew and were fangirling. But wow. Okay.
Yeah.
I may have answered my question. I tried to look up what Sidney Poitier has been up to, and that's how I learned that from 1997 to 2007, Sidney Poitier was the Bahamanian ambassador to Japan.
I'm sorry, what?
Excuse me?
Sidney Poitier had dual citizenship in America and the Bahamas, and in 1997, the Bahamas appointed him ambassador to Japan, and he was the ambassador for 10 years.
So he's been handling grown folks' business, is what's been going on. That's what he's been doing. Wow. All right, Sidney.
He just went, great, I'm going to, I mean, I imagine he had to, you know, even if you're a famous ambassador, you gotta go there and live there, right?
I'm assuming. Nice.
Dan Rooney, the late longtime owner of the Steelers, was Barack Obama's ambassador to Ireland. My parents were close with the Rooneys, and so they talked to some people over there. You know, we were visiting, and I did a semester there. At some point, they asked, how was it? And they said, yeah, we weren't used to having an ambassador that did things before. That's new. I just want to picture Sidney in Japan, like, busting heads. Like, what are you doing for the Bahamas, Tokyo?
I was just going to say, like, man, Sidney Poitier, if anybody on Earth could hold me accountable to anything, it's him.
Right?
Exactly. Yes, this is...
like, the thought of Sidney Poitier looking disappointed at me
is too much to bear.
Right. I don't want to think about it.
Far too much. I can't handle it. Like, he would make an excellent life coach, or just, you know, he just pop in every so often. It's like, my dishes aren't done. And then there's like Sidney, you know, he just kind of pops up in the kitchen window, shaking his head disappointedly. And it's like, you're right. You're right, Mr. Poitier.
Speaking of late in the careers, River Phoenix had three more theatrical releases after this one, including a deep posthumous release. He was in a movie when he was dying. He was making a movie called When He Was Dying.
When He Was Dying.
Right. At the time of his death, he was making a movie called Dark Blood. They finished it and released it in 2012. Yikes. It finally saw the light of day.
What?
Oh, my God.
I'd imagine by the fact that no one has heard of that, that it didn't amount to much. The director, Phil Alden Robinson, has had a long career
of dad movies.
Kind of below the radar. sort of dad movies. Only five theatrical features. He's written a lot of stuff. He's done TV episode. He has five theatrical movies. Two of which only barely came out, In the Mood in 1987, and The Angriest Man in Brooklyn, which was one of those, it might be Robin Williams' last movie in 2014. Mm. The other two were bigger hits than Sneakers. Field of Dreams is directed by Mr. Robinson. And previous episode subject, The Sum of All Fears is his biggest hit. Mm. Other than dad movies, no connective tissue there. Like, no. To go Field of Dreams, Sneakers, and Sum of All Fears, he doesn't have a type. He is, however, now the vice president of the Academy. So.
Oh.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, the reason there aren't more facts is because most of the other interesting things about this movie are, like, in-jokes about math and code. Mm. But before we finish up, the building facade in the opening scene happens to be the Hill Valley Clock Tower from Back to the Future.
Oh,
cool.
And we both, Robin and I, picked a Robert Redford movie when we were pitching. Little did we know, we were selecting the same jacket. In the jacket in this movie is Robert Redford's jacket from The Natural.
Huh.
Aw, well, that's a nice little...
We overlapped on a jacket.
That's a nice little nod to Robert Redford fans, I guess.
That's like the Fonz jacket is in the closet during Scream when Henry Winkler
is it?
Yeah, and he throws open the doors to see if someone's hiding there. There's like five suits and a black leather jacket.
Aw.
That's really cute.
And I was going to say, Robin's recap is my second favorite way to learn about this movie. The first, my first favorite way is, if you look at the Wikipedia for this movie, it has this fact that's like, a press kit was distributed on a floppy disk that imitated hacking for early press, and that is available on the internet right now. It's like,
oh my
in
gosh.
One of those internet archive things, it's linked from the Wikipedia. Like, if you click the source to that, it takes you to a floppy disk press kit where it's like, you'll have to enter the password C-Tech Astronomy to access bios of David Strathairn, and it's great. It's so good.
That's fun. Like, that must have been very cute back in 1992. Like, oh my God, this is so exciting. Like, ooh, I feel like a hacker. I feel like.
So, Robin, I cut you off.
Oh, I was going to say, when we were talking about Sidney Poitier's character, I love that in this movie that all of their team, with the exception of Liz, because she is a woman, so why does she matter?
Right.
They all have, like, interesting, complicated backstories that we only hear tiny bits about. And so you sort of get to, like, build your own world with these people. I love when they do little, like, references to things that we never see. And, like, why did Sidney Poitier get fired from the CIA? We don't know. We don't need to know. But we know that it must have been something that he did that out of principle that makes him interesting and dignified because he's Sidney Poitier. Right. I love that stuff. Totally. I live for that stuff.
Yeah, that was a great script note of that. I like that kind of stuff, too, where you don't need we don't need the whole backstory of every single person that's on screen. Just little snippets, little bits of morsels, little sprinkles
right?
here and there. I must have
Dan Aykroyd called Mother. We don't need to know.
Right. It's like,
just it.
I wanted more of the wacky math genius.
Donald
Logue's
because
character? He was.
Right.
Yeah. One, because he was a Quentin Tarantino type before there was really a Quentin Tarantino, which was interesting. Mm. And two, because the weirdest part of the movie is when they're observing his affair with what's her name, and for no reason, they're both acting like they're in a community theater porno. Like, it's just way too, oh dear, please, out of that's never addressed. It's just like, why are these two people this way?
Right.
I love that scene where Robert Redford pretends to be a private investigator sent by his wife. Because first of all, that actress, I know her first name is Lee for some reason. I have no idea what her last name is. She is adorable. She's great in everything. And the way that she community theaters it, like you said, like she's so like, oh no! And then like the little bit of hope that he loves her for real, like you see that like reanimate her heart. I love it. Sweet.
This is
I like that scene.
It's made me realize that I had never really seen River Phoenix in do any extensive acting other than Stand By Me. Like I've never watched a full River Phoenix film. I don't think that I got the full experience of, you know, what because
he doesn't have a lot to do here.
Right.
I think he's kind of there to look cute. Which...
yeah. I mean, you know, done and done, sure. Yeah. But he kind of reminded me of the brothers from Ocean's 11. Like he was just more there.
The same thing. Because he's allegedly there for skills, but really he's there to do the like the shit work that nobody wants to do.
Right.
And look like a young idiot.
Right. And like cause distractions and a ruckus.
Right.
So
two recommendations if you want to learn more about River Phoenix and his powers. Running on Empty, which is what he got his Oscar nomination for, is a very sad, good movie about a family that has lived their life on the run because the parents were hippies who blew something up. And he wants to be a normal teenager, but his parents are hippie fugitives. And Dogfight.
Actually, I may have seen Dogfight a bajillion years ago. Is that like Lily?
Yeah. Lily Taylor.
Yes. Okay. Yes. So yes, I did see that one. What about My Private Idaho? Is that?
So.
I mean, I feel like I've avoided it for years because of, you know, the subject matter. And I feel like it's just going to be too dark and sad.
I haven't seen My Private Idaho since I was a teenager, and I don't feel like I can comment on if it is actually good or not.
Gotcha.
So stay tuned for whenever the Keanu review gets there.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Did we acknowledge on the podcast that there is a new River Phoenix in the world?
Who's that?
Joaquin.
Oh, and that's Mary right. Rose. Yeah.
Maybe.
That is right.
That's so nice.
That's the most I've ever liked either one of them.
It's sweet. It's also kind of like really sad. Like
it's incredibly sad.
I don't want to derail. Why don't you like them? I like both of them.
Okay.
Well, Rooney, I just spent a good a bit of time with her in Song to Song watching that piece of shit.
I was going to say, I don't actually dislike Rooney Mara. I just don't like her. I have no positive feelings to outweigh my like general sense of you seem awful. And then her starting to date Joaquin Phoenix, I was like, oh, I was obviously right. Why do I hate Joaquin Phoenix? I don't know.
That's fair.
Who could say?
My feelings about Joaquin ebbs and flows. Like there was a time period when I was like all about him, and then something happened. I think it was I'm Not Here. I think that's what happened.
I feel like or that's probably the bulk. Oh, of the
okay,
reason
yes.
And I was like, I don't know.
Even before that happened, though, I was always like, "You're a good actor. You have an interesting looking face. Something seems." You seem like a jerk.
And wasn't that, isn't his name?
Yeah.
What, he was going by Leaf. So Joaquin, is that not even a middle name? That's just some shit he made up?
I remember looking this up at some point.
Gotcha.
And I don't remember the answer.
Look, Rooney Mara starts on second base with me because it's a big-eyed, charming-looking brunette, but my eternal soft spot. But I think I, like, attached to her because I thought she was really good in the Nightmare on Elm Street remake, and then the Girl with a Dragon Tattoo remake was about the same time, and I thought she was really good in that. And then, like, even if my feelings had faded, A Ghost Story is amazing.
She just had good timing with you.
Yeah.
Got distracted, so I'll have to hear your opinion on Rooney Mara again when I listen back to this recording. But he was born Joaquin. That's his given name. And then he chose to go by Leaf when he started his acting career, because his siblings all had
Rainbow and names, River,
Rain, Liberty, and Summer. And so he wanted to be like his siblings.
I mean, I feel like Joaquin is much better. Anyway, the name. Joaquin is better than Leaf. So Sneakers!
And believe me, if he walked in the front door right now, I'd be counting the minutes until he left, because I feel like there's no way to, like, interact with him on a human level.
Right.
But... like, do you want a glass of milk? No, I wouldn't. That's way too mean.
Anyway, Sneakers. My favorite scene is the awkward date. Like, it got plus one for the Cantonese version of Bad Bad Leroy Brown. But then... everything in there is the timing between the two of them. Oh, it's so good.
Yeah, that is a good scene. And just like when he's like inviting her to breakfast and should I call you or nudge you? And she's just like, you know what?
Like, she still had to go home right. with him. That girl, I cannot believe it. Like, she lets these weirdos move into her amazing right. apartment. What's her deal? Is she just rich? Like, that is why I want to know more about this person. How does she know Robert Redford?
Right.
Is she financing that amazing house teaching piano lessons? Like, what's happening?
There's a lot of question marks where her character is concerned. Like,
yeah.
For the most, like, why are you letting all of this happen around you?
I mean, we know the answer is she wants it.
She wants the D.
So, yeah, I like it. I just like it and I don't love it. It's stylish. It's fun. It's funny. The comic timing is great throughout because it's that heist plot, particularly because it's a heist plot that does not really reveal itself for the first hour.
Mm-hmm.
I just didn't attach to it. And basically the conflict is really dramatic music while a man tries to walk all slow. And that's just silly. Like that, I knew what they were going for and I was just laughing because it's hitting the bass hard and he's just like, I'm walking through molasses. And like, this is just goofy.
I did give it 1 point for the exasperation that Sidney Poitier finally experiences with Mother when he's just like, you know what? I don't want to talk to you anymore. Just you stay over there and do your job. I just don't want to talk to you anymore. Which seemed very apropos. Like, yeah, I could. That's realistic.
Anything else, or should we rate Sneakers?
Let's rate it.
I am curious. I want Robin to go first.
Okay, I actually did not write down a number, and so I am going to quickly scan my other scores and try not to let your lukewarmness affect me too much in either direction.
Don't let us bring you down, girl.
Yeah. All right, I'm going to go with an 87.
Ooh, Camila.
53.
That's a 62 from me. So, yeah, I'm glad we didn't give those lukewarm numbers and bring you down. 67 and a third is the final score, which is, we think it's pretty good. One of us a lot more than the other. It happens. Yeah. It happens all the time on this show.
Right. There's a specific person that I would go ahead and be like, yeah, I would suggest this movie to. It's like, you know, there's not everybody. I'm not, you know, going to go campaigning for it. Sneakers! But...
Well, here, bring us down. Because before we get to the other segments, I happen to know that Robin, for some extra credit, went ahead and revisited a little film called Forces of Nature.
Oh, that's right.
Watch Forces
of
Nature.
Yes, kick us in our pants.
And I can't kick you in your pants because that movie was a lot better than I remembered it being.
Yay!
I still don't like it. It still wouldn't get a 50 from me, right? I would probably give it in the mid-40s, I think.
Okay. That's acceptable.
But I remembered it being aggressively annoying, and it's only a little annoying.
So did you watch it before or after election results?
I watched it during.
Because you could have been on a high after results, and you're just like...
Right, I watched it the same night I watched Sneakers, I think, where it was just like, I need to occupy my brain while we sit around waiting for Nevada, which ended up being irrelevant, right?
Right.
But anyway, the thing about Forces of Nature that I wouldn't have been able to tell you this, but watching it again, I was reminded of what is so annoying about it. It's like, the whole movie is about how it's terrible to get married.
Right.
Right? He's on his way to his wedding, and like all of fate seems to be telling him, don't get married. Mm-hmm. And then he does get married. And we're supposed to think that this means that like he really wants it now. And this is what he wants, even though fate is telling him not to do it. So like that doesn't totally work for me. But I think that the thing that really is hard for me is that like I think being married is great.
Right.
Like, I'm one of those people who, like, when I have friends who have been in long-term relationships, I'm always like, just get married. Just do it. Right. And so to watch, like, at this, when I was a teenager, I wasn't like that. So, but watching it this time, I was very much like, you know, they're
offended.
They're spending so much time talking about how horrible being married is, which they're going to ultimately discard. Right. He does get married.
Right.
And also, they're wrong.
Right. No, you're, that's, so, I watched it like maybe a couple months ago, and that was one of the things, and that's may have been like the first time I watched it in years, and that was glaring to me. I was like, yeah, this is like, they're really, they're going hard on marriage here.
Right. And I'm like, I've been married for almost 10 years. It's good. It's a good thing to do. If you, like, you have to marry the right person.
Exactly.
But like, it is not a broken institution. So that was really holding me back. But Steve Zahn is just a treasure on this earth.
Bless his soul.
He's like barely in that movie, but every time he's on the screen, it just fills my heart with joy. And then also the nostalgia thing kicked in hard. Like, this movie is trapped in 1999 Amber. Mm-hmm. And Sandy in her bucket hat. Like, I just...
And the raver little jogger pants and...
Yes. And the music, I very much enjoyed this from a nostalgia perspective. And also the moments of the movie insist upon itself with slow-mo weather and things like that.
The raindrops that are extra emphasized.
I found that incredibly annoying when I saw this as a teenager. And as a grown-up, I'm like, oh, that's cute. You were learning a new thing.
Not to break down the message of Forces of Nature, because they certainly didn't. But, like, I read it like, what if your pre-wedding jitters were emphasized by 50 factors conspiring to make you feel them more differently? Could you get through that?
That's a good point.
Mm-hmm. But I will say, no, it doesn't really justify why he decides to go ahead and marry, what's her name?
Maura.
Yeah. Who, by the way, one of my favorite face actings of all time is when her ex is singing Phil Collins at her and she's looking away and reacting. Like, oh, perfect.
Yeah.
Well, I still recommend it. I should revisit it. I mean, it's probably been 10 years. I've seen it a bunch, but it's probably been 10 years. Steve Zahn could have been our Tony Goldwyn. Let's go to the bingo card. I don't know.
I think we got a lot here, buddy.
All right.
I'm getting too old for this.
Did someone literally say it?
Robert Redford says it.
And oh, I missed that.
Yeah, yep.
Oh, that's
it's like
so
very. It's like close to the beginning of the movie, and also in the trailer.
I don't count that as also the old age sucks square.
I don't think so. I don't think we really got into anything like that. But
if anything, this movie makes being old seem totally fun.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Friendly robot. The dog in dude's apartment.
That was a friendly robot.
Nice.
Look at that.
Kidnapping
Bobby? Definitely occurs.
Yes.
Yeah, if you're thrown in a trunk, it's got to be a kidnapping.
Absolutely. And I couldn't recall if there was a foreign language spoken by anybody. I feel like there should have been, but I don't know if it happened.
I don't think that there was.
Only anagrams. They really milked that anagram opening credits. It was no accident that they stopped trying to do anagrams right when they got to Dan Aykroyd.
Right.
Like, nope, we're out.
Well, also, it's like, wow, you're really kind of giving away the plot, a decent plot point here.
I was surprised watching it how little the because Too Many Secrets is one of the things that I think about this movie every single time I play Scrabble.
Oh.
It's not really that important. In my memory, I had justified that as like, oh, when he sees that C-Tech Astronomy is an anagram for Too Many Secrets, he knows that Cosmo's involved because that was something they said to each other. Nope, not that. It has as much meaning as Cootie's rat semen, which is another one of the anagrams.
So, I'm getting too old for this. A kidnapping and friendly robot. If we get a biopic, I have a bingo.
I need either a pickup truck or adapted from TV, and I got a bingo.
I need adapted from TV or a woman director.
Has biopic has been on every bingo card without winning, right?
Yeah, I think so. Or at least the last three.
It's possible there aren't that many biopics that have gone to number one.
Maybe I should scan the list and see.
Do most biopics get a platform release and like peak at four?
Right.
Anyway, right. Now to You Can't Handle the Truth, aside from our clear and ringing endorsement of Forces of Nature, two of three hosts agree.
Two of three hosts also agree that Sneakers is meh.
Right.
So
if you love Sneakers, Forces of Nature may not be for you. That's the Netflix algorithm won't tell you that, but we're proving it here today.
So I did not get a chance to watch a new movie, but I did watch the four-part docuseries of Seduced Inside Nexium. OMG, Woof. My God.
Okay, so all four parts are out?
Yeah.
Okay, so I'm clearly going to be starting my STARS trial.
Exactly.
Wait, is this just another thing about that thing?
It is.
It's like, right, it's like a drug. It's a drug. Like, you just walk. I mean, now there is there has been a conclusion, basically. But I mean, at this point now, I just want to know, like, what Keith's life is like on the inside. Now I want to, and also, like, figure out, like, these random Nexium foreverers, the ones that are just, like, still hanging on to by a thread with the whole thing. But yeah, that shit is, like, insane. Episode 3 is going to be a little bit rough, just because a lot of content. Yeah. A lot of secrets told. If you are like Robin and myself and have been just like hanging on and trying to like ingest all of the information about this fucking cult, I highly suggest you go ahead and start your STARS trial period for 7 days and watch the 4-part documentary.
Fantastic.
Robin?
I watched The Witches.
The new one.
The new one on HBO Max, and it's pretty good.
I heard witches are pissed.
Had this, who is this for? Kind of problem, because like almost every child I know, it's too scary for. I realized like halfway through, I was like, oh, my niece Gia would like this. And then I realized that my niece Gia is a Robert Zemeckis super fan. All the more reason. And I told her, you don't know this yet, but you have a favorite director. He made this movie that you should watch.
Do you have a hot take on the Anne Hathaway's fingers controversy?
I don't know what it is.
So her character has like 2 fingers, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. They got in a lot of hot water because that you can have that related to a certain disability or birth defect. You can end up with your hand looking like that.
Okay.
And so they got called out for making this disability into a scary villain thing.
Mm. Okay.
Okay.
Yeah. I also heard that witches were pissed about how witches were portrayed in this film.
That's extremely, if I were a good witch, I'd be very upset.
And you know, witch TikTok is big now. I don't know how that happened. There's a lot of witches on TikTok. They're very vocal and they were casting spells on the president, which, hey, could have worked. That might be it.
Yeah.
Thank a witch today.
Yeah. This is going to be all over the place, so I'll try to just hit them quick. As teased last week, I watched 2 of the early James Bond movies. Now confirmed, don't particularly care about James Bond. I was glad to see them. It's fun. They all have great scenes. When the spider is crawling on Sean Connery, it's very, very tense. He's good. The reaction he gives when she identifies herself as Pussy Galore is worth the price of admission, just to see him reacting to that name. But I like the style a lot and have no use for the substance of most James Bond movies.
Huh. Well, I'm glad you settled that at this early stage in your life. And now, you know, you can move on. Move on to other franchises.
You know, it was refreshing because anything, you're like, am I ever going to watch all of those? To now be able to go, no, I'm not. Pretty much going to see them as they come out. I guess my recommendation is Let Him Go, the Western that's in theaters right now with Diane Lane and Kevin Costner. It's not, you know, a thing that you're necessarily going to remember a year from now, but it's a nice old people Western. You know, they've got a problem, they go and solve it. But Leslie Manville is fantastic as the angry but faux charming matriarch of a backwoodsy North Dakota clan.
That's worth the price of admission as far as I'm concerned.
Absolutely. So that was good. And I don't know, I saw Blade Runner again, and this time I really liked it, and now I just don't know what to do with myself. When I finally watched Blade Runner too late in life, in anticipation of Blade Runner 2049, I was like, man, music, lights, production design, great. Everything else, meh. And this time I was like, man, I want to wrap myself up in this universe. I don't know. Maybe it's a 2020 thing. This bleak but stylish dystopia looks a lot more appealing now. I don't know.
Like, as the world ends around you, you wish that it looked cooler while it did it.
Yeah, that's the one. I don't know. It's have we done this on the podcast? Has there been Blade Runner talk?
I feel like there must
probably
have been. I don't know. I feel like I never shut up about how I don't like Blade Runner. And I'm sorry, world.
I'm not there either. I don't actively hate it, but I just don't.
Because, like, I get it.
Like, I tried to watch the one with Ryan Gosling. I even tried to watch the original one before that and yada yada. And I'm just like, oh God, when will it end?
I do think Blade Runner 2049 made me like OG Blade Runner more because it is better.
I wonder, not to be, yes.
It's like, I guess that I realized that, so Blade Runner 2049 is all style, no substance. Mm. Anything that is allegedly substance actively sucks, right? So Blade Runner original is all style, no substance. Anything that is allegedly substance is okay. I mean, the guy's speech when he dies at the end is awesome. So, like,
oh yeah,
there are things in Blade Runner that are not completely awful. That is not the case for Blade Runner 2049. Therefore, Blade Runner is a better movie than Blade Runner 2049. And I'm rambling. Sorry.
Not to go Christopher Nolan, but this was the first time I saw it, you know, in an impressive setting. I saw it like outdoors on a giant screen in an impressive place in like a pop-up cinema at a national historic landmark that accentuated the movie well. And the other time I saw it was at home. I saw part of it in college in like a classroom, so maybe it benefited from the setting.
That is possible, but I also feel like I've given that movie too many chances. Like,
oh yeah,
I saw the normal version of it and was like, I don't like this. And then I believed people that if I watched one of the other versions, I think the first director's cut that came out, that I would like it this time. And so I watched it and I was like, I still don't like it. So it's like, you can't keep saying, maybe you'll like it if only you do it this way, right? Like, if you watch this cut on this screen, maybe you'll like it. No,
right.
I'm done with it.
No, you're fine.
Just live don't your like life Blade without Blade Runner. The world's going to keep turning.
Here's what I'm going to report back on next week. I've turned around on this. This was one of those things that I, like, got a, do you want to review this? And I was like, no, not at all. Do you know about the Mel Gibson thing?
No.
I was vaguely aware.
Oh, wait, the Santa thing?
Yes. Oh, I was vaguely aware that there was a Mel Gibson action movie coming out and that he's Santa. And I thought that it was like, oh, he's like, you know, it's like Bad Santa, but an action movie. I don't care. Definitely don't care about that. Then I saw the preview and learned what this movie actually is. To give you the Wikipedia synopsis, to save his declining business, Kris Kringle, also known as Santa Claus, is forced into a partnership with the U.S. military. Making matters worse, Kris gets locked into a deadly battle of wits against a highly skilled assassin, Walton Goggins, hired by a precocious 12-year-old after receiving a lump of coal in his stocking.
What?
Here's the twist there. I thought this was like a guy that dresses like Santa and shoots people. It's like, no, this is an action movie with Santa. What? He's playing old, grizzly, angry Santa fighting Walton Goggins.
Christopher the Kringle.
I think it's going to be terrible, and I can't wait.
No, I'm like, I would absolutely watch that on Netflix for Walton Goggins alone. Like, him and all of his fucking 72 teeth.
I just can't with Mel Gibson. He's one of the
no,
ones
I know.
Where, like, I can't even look at his face, really, which is too bad. Like, I really... Like, I even tried to watch an old Mad Max the other day, and it wasn't working, and it's too bad. I really want to go revisit some of his old movies and not constantly think about what a garbage person he is.
Right.
Well, I mean, if anything, that dovetails in, where it's like, you think you're going to make what work? Let's see what happens, buddy. It's called Fat Man, all one word.
Wow.
And boy, some night this week, alone at the drive-in, the late showing, I am strapping in for that. So more next time.
Oh my God.
Should we draw a movie?
Let's do it.
Yes, please.
As a reminder, for the first time in a while, we have no way out. There are no vetoes. Nothing special is happening. One of the upcoming episodes will be selected by our trivia winner, but that's not right now. Right now, we just draw a movie and hang on tight. The number is 889. That is Police Academy.
All right.
The original Police Academy.
I'm glad it's okay.
Yeah, I'm glad it's the original one. Not like 17 or something. Yeah.
Robin's face said fun. Camila's face said...
Looking on the bright side of this, I think that my actual experience is going to be but
I mean, it could have been a lot worse.
Do you have any history with these movies, either of you?
Ish. Like, I feel like my mom, I don't recall ever watching one from beginning to end, but I feel like I've seen so many bits and pieces of all of them, like, throughout my childhood or something. Like, and I don't necessarily think my mom was a fan, but I think it was, like, one of those things she didn't turn off because she was a cop also at that time. So, I don't know. Yeah, I don't have any, like, real history to go behind it.
That is fascinating.
Former host Aaron Kleiber and I appeared on the podcast Does This Hold Up, which was one of the old Epicast shows. I don't think they're doing it anymore, but that was a long-running Pittsburgh-based movie podcast, and Police Academy was the subject. I don't quite remember what I thought, so let's keep it that way. I mean, this was a good 7 or 8 years ago, and I watched it on a plane, so I'm not coming to it totally fresh, but fresh enough. Right.
It's streaming on Peacock. So there's that.
Oh, there you go.
All right. I guess I'm finally downloading Peacock.
We're taking the Peacock plunge this week for Police Academy. And yes, the first 5 Police Academies went to number one.
Wow.
So we easily could have gone deep into the franchise. But no, we got the original. Great.
Yeah.
Sneakers was released September 11th, 1992. What was the number one song in America?
Right,
when
said Fred.
Sneakers. No. Robin, take a guess, and then I'll give a relevant hint.
Is that too early for it to be I Will Always Love You?
I think it is.
Okay.
I think that would have been a bit later in the year. The relevant hint is this weekend, in a fit of gleefully playing songs from Philadelphia, the city of Philadelphia, to bask in their achievement. This was one of the songs that I played.
Boys to Men?
Motown Philly.
You both are correct with Boys to Men, but this was a little bit more of a pointed jab than just choosing Motown Philly.
End of the Road.
End of the Road.
Wow.
I went Philadelphia Freedom, which, you know, not from, and then listened to the Rocky theme 3 times. Then listened to Make My Dreams Come True by Hall & Oates, and then End of the Road.
Nice. That's a good playlist. You should probably put that together. Go ahead and publish that on Spotify. With specifically the Rocky theme in three times in a row.
Yeah, three different versions. Well, you know what you could do is the theme from Rocky, the theme from Rocky 2, and then the theme from Rocky 3, which are, they just get a little longer each time.